think we start at text 28, isn't it? Yeah. So I'll just do text 28 through 32, and we'll do 33 together, right? Yes. When Maharaj Bharat performed the sacrifice known as Masnara, or a sacrifice in the place known as Masnara, he gave in charity 14 lakhs of excellent elephants with white tusks and black bodies completely covered with golden ornaments. Text 29. Translation. As one cannot approach the heavenly planets simply by the strength of his arms, for who can touch the heavenly planets with his hands? One cannot imitate the wonderful activities of Maharaj Bharat. No one could perform such activities in the past, nor will anyone be able to do so in the future. Text 30. Translation. When Maharaj Bharat was on tour, he defeated or killed all the Kiratas, Hunas, Yavanas, Paundras, Kankas, Kasas, Sakas, and the kings who were opposed to the Vedic principles of Brahminical culture. Text 31. Translation. Formerly, after conquering the demigods, all the demons had taken shelter in the lower planetary system known as Rasatala, and had brought all the wives and daughters of the demigods there also. Maharaj Bharat, however, rescued all those women along with their associates from the clutches of the demons, and he returned them to the demigods. Text 32, translation. Maharaj Bharat provided all necessities for his subjects, both on this earth and in the heavenly planets, for 27,000 years. He circulated his orders and distributed his soldiers in all directions. Text 33, translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Prabhupada Ki. As the ruler of the entire universe, Emperor Bharat had the opulences of a great kingdom and unconquerable soldiers. His sons and family had seemed to him to be his entire life. But finally, he thought of all this as an impediment to spiritual advancement, and therefore he ceased from enjoying it. Purport. Maharaj Bharat had incomparable opulence in sovereignty, soldiers, sons, daughters, and everything for material enjoyment. But when he realized that all such material opulences were useless for spiritual advancement, he retired from material enjoyment. The Vedic civilization enjoins that after a certain age, following in the footsteps of Maharaj Bharat, one should cease to enjoy material opulence and should take the order of Vanaprastha. Om Agyanachi Miranda Shajanandana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Stabitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vanshakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyai Pata Pajitanam Pavanipyu Vaishnavipyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. So here we're dealing with midlife crisis, approaching 50, and you've done well for yourself, you have facility, you have family, it's all working out pretty well. I mean, you're the emperor of the whole universe, that must be classified as doing pretty well for yourself. And yet, where's the satisfaction? Where's the enjoyment? It's not actually there. So there are various options then. You can get a tattoo, a motorcycle, or if you have enough money, maybe you can trade your wife in for a newer model. Or there are various options. The Vedic injunctions recommend Vanaprastha, which means instead of looking at the detail as being the problem, this wife versus that wife, or my Citroen Berlingo versus a Harley Davidson. No, that's not the problem. It's the whole thing. It's the dravya, the material energy. That's the problem. We think we can enjoy it. We can't. we can try, and that's bona fide. You can have the whole thing and do the whole thing, become an emperor of your own little world. And then when you realize that it's not working out, you should either be intelligent enough to understand that it's the whole principle that's wrong, or you should be humble enough to just take it as good faith that when the scriptures and the brahmanas are telling you this is the case, then okay, because you tried it your way, it didn't work, so maybe accept that there might be a higher authority on this matter. Maharaj Bharat is intelligent. He looks at it and he realizes, no, it's not going to work. I mean, you could say he's in a good position because he has everything. That's usually the problem with being poor. You live in the illusion that if I had this and that and the other thing, then I would be happy. So then you have the rich people who have this and that and the other thing. They're still not happy. But if they don't have scripture, then they're even worse off, because we see rich, famous people in the Western world who don't actually have scripture. They're frustrated like anything, because they have all the things that society tells them will make them happy, and they're not happy. So that's the principle of the material world. It's not going to make us happy at all. There's only one thing that's going to make us happy. That's Krishna consciousness, because Krishna is happiness. So the happiness is always there. We have the Paramatma in our heart, and so Krishna is always with us. And when we direct our consciousness to that, then there is an unlimited supply of happiness at our disposal. Happiness is not like bricks or other material things that you have to accumulate them. If you want to build a house, you need so many bricks. No, happiness is just an endless supply. It's the natural position of the jiva to be happy. It's inherent within us. That's why it's so confusing when we direct our consciousness outward in order to be happy, and the opposite happens. That what happens is that we direct our consciousness away from that happiness that is already there and into all these different manifestations of material energy, because we have this lower mode that is functioning, and we're identifying with it, this passion, right? So then the idea of taking vanaprastha is to reverse that process. What happens when you become a householder is that you expand the field, right? There's a wife, there's children, there's a couch, there's drapes, there's china, there's, you know, all these things that we accumulate more and more and more. And then vanaprastha is going the other way. Vanaprastha technically means forest dweller, but it shouldn't be taken that literally. In the Vedic, it's said that a vanaprastha can live either on the edge of the village or the edge of the forest. So it's not that you completely disappear and just live off roots and tree bark. It's just that you reverse the process. Instead of accumulating and increasing, you decrease and you detach yourself. This can be done in various ways. The wife can be a part of it or not, whether, I mean, depending on her mood. But the principle is the reversal. So from a literal point of view, it seems like a hopeless situation in the modern world to take vanaprastha. You know, it's just too close to London. What are you going to do? I mean, even if you find a forest and you can walk around there, probably some official is going to come and kick you out at some point, right? It's not really practically possible. But it's possible to reverse the process anyway. Look at your house. What do I have? What is here? And where is the connection to Krishna? Is it there? Or is it just that we were in Nice and we saw this nice chandelier or something and we just had to have it? Is it actually useful in your spiritual life? That's what he says here. Finally, he thought of all this as an impediment to spiritual advancement. So if it is, chuck it out, right? It's something that happens also. You don't have to be a Vaishnava to actually apply this kind of vanaprastha principle. My parents recently, they've retired now, and they recently sold the house and threw out many boxes of stuff that's just been accumulating over 30, 40 years of marriage, and now they have an apartment and they have less stuff. Still too much if you ask me, but hey, you know, the principle is there. So if you do it, let's say, scientifically, then you get the most benefit. If you do it whimsically, like we can't really maintain this whole house. Well, okay, it still works, but it doesn't work as effectively. So the idea is that anything we do, anything we think or meditate on should be in relationship to bhakti. There is no other process than bhakti. Karma, jnana, and yoga are elements of bhakti. We have a tendency because we are by nature attached. We're not Atmarama. We're Tathasta Shakti. We get attached to whatever it is that we're dealing with, and whatever it is that works, we get attached to that. So if we are doing some kind, even if we're doing some kind of spiritual activity, excuse me, we have a tendency to get attached to the activity, and sometimes a little bit forget what's the goal of the activity. Does that make sense? We have a service. And we like that service, that's making me Krishna conscious. So suddenly, that becomes my Krishna consciousness. If you're doing books, if you're pujari, if you're giving classes, if you're cooking, whatever it is, that's Krishna conscious. And then everything else is not, it's just not my service, Prabhu. But it only has a value in so much that it triggers the devotional mood. Right? That's why we say we're not sectarian. You can be a Muslim or a Christian, doesn't matter. If you've triggered that devotional mood, you're a devotee. So the Vedic is given by Krishna so that we may learn how to trigger that mood, because it's not coming naturally to us. Why? Because for millions of lives, we've gotten distracted by the dravya, the external energy, right? We've been dealing with it for so long, we think that's what's making me happy. The car makes me happy, the beautiful wife makes me happy, whatever it is, it's going to make me happy. The deodorant, whatever, you know. But it's not, you know, because what's the deodorant commercial? It's you put on the deodorant and then all these super qualified women start following you down the street. So it's not the deodorant, it's that people will like me. That's the thing, you know. Why? Because relationships. Now, it's a perverted idea of relationships where I'm in the center and everybody's just attracted to me because I have a deodorant. So it's not really a scientific way of approaching it, but the principle is the same of relationships, right? So if we maintain that principle in our consciousness, then we can become Krishna conscious in pretty much any sphere, in any activity that we're doing. We just do it for Krishna, right? Of course, there are certain limitations. I mean, butcher for Krishna, it's a difficult one. There are certain things, you know, these Ashwamedha Yakyas, these Gomedha Yakyas, these cow sacrifices and horse sacrifices, they're just not recommended in Kali Yuga because we cannot do it. You know, we don't have the consciousness to do that. So all this meat eating, that's why we hear that he goes after all these tribals in the previous verse 30, you know, the Kiratas, Hunas, Yavanas, these are all the tribals that are not exactly following Vedic injunctions, because this is not good, right? But other than that, whatever you do, you can do it for Krishna. You can cook for Krishna, you can drive your car for Krishna, you can whatever it is, because you can maintain your family for Krishna. It's Krishna's family, I'm just maintaining. That's what makes the difference, right? So so that has to be in the forefront. Now, the problem here with Maharaj Bharat is that he actually messes up in the end, right? Because he actually ends up in the forest and gets too attached to that. He gets attached to the detachment. It becomes a yogic process for him. Now, what happens is that we are, by nature, we crave association, because that's why Krishna manifests everything, is for the association. He's God, it's not a big deal for him, he wants association. We think it's a big deal to be God because we're trying to be God, but it's not. So he ends up associating with a deer and becomes an animal. So we have to be, it's a very subtle thing, you know. We can be very expert in our spiritual practice. We can have all the facility, like this is a very nice facility, and the deities are there and it's all going on, the whole program. But if the consciousness is off just slightly, we're going to become a very nice and cuddly animal. That's what it is, you know. I mean, there's no loss. Bharat Maharaj is self-realized, and there's never a loss in spiritual advancement, so he becomes a self-realized deer. Still a deer, You know, it's not like devotional service. It's not like going on easily when you're an animal. It's just not exactly in the dharma of an animal. So we have to be very careful here that always we put the relationship on the top and the facility as a support, or the culture, the Vedic culture, whatever it is, the meditation, the knowledge, that we put it in support of the relationship of being in a devotional mood to Krishna, or even better, assisting others in coming to that devotional mood, right? That's the story of Bahulashva and Shrutadeva, that Krishna comes to both of them. Bahulashva is a king, and he has all opulence. And Shrutadeva, he's a brahmana, he has nothing. So Krishna comes and manifests himself in two. So he goes to both of their houses, because they're pure devotees. They crave the association of Krishna. So he comes, and he brings all his homeboys, Narad Muni, Bhrigu, these sages are coming, and Bahulashva is offering all opulence, as it's really nice, and he's so excited about the whole thing. And Shrutadeva, he has to go to the neighbor to borrow a grass mat that he can sit on, but he's still ecstatic, and it's just what, see, Krishna doesn't care about the facility, it's his anyway, already. You know, it's like if someone comes to your house and borrows all your stuff, like your table and your plates and your chairs and your tablecloth and your candles and everything, and then invites you over for dinner and all your stuff is standing over there, and he says, look, aren't you impressed at what I've done, you know? And it's all your stuff standing there. It's nice, but it's not exactly impressive. You can have a nice dinner and you can have nice relationship, but the table and the thing, that's not impressive. So that's the way Krishna feels about like this place or any other place. It's like, okay, nice, but it's already mine, you know. So that's not like, we shouldn't be too puffed up about that. But what happens is Bahulashva, he's glorifying Krishna and he's all the facilities working and everything, but he's forgetting the associates. You know, whereas Shrutadeva, he is also including the associates. He doesn't have much facility, you know, it's what it is. But he's so happy that all the associates are there and Krishna is there and we can have association. So that's the difference. Bahulashva, he got distracted by the facility. He's a pure devotee. I mean, it's all for Krishna. But he forgot the devotees. So it's a very subtle thing that if you want to be the devotee of Krishna, you have to be the devotee of the devotees, right? The facility is not enough. Its only value is in its application in serving the devotees, right? So and that's the problem. We have this tendency to become detached. So if we are primarily focusing on karma, we will get attached to the karma, to the activity. If we're primarily focused on the jnana, we will become attached to that speculative attitude. And the yoga is what happens to Maharaj Bharat here, that he gets attached to this. It's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita how yoga is like a snake that swallows you up, because it just completely isolates you from association. And where's the fun in that? How is Krishna going to benefit from that? You're just sitting in the Himalayas going Om for 60 years. It's not like, why did he expand the whole universes, all the universes for that? So devotional service, that's the beauty of devotional service. It includes all the other stuff. There are activities going on, and there are results being gained from those activities. Knowledge is being gained, and it's actually real knowledge. And the meditation is there. The deep meditation on Krishna is there. And it's all for Krishna, and that's what makes it all work. Actually, there is only devotional service. Anything else is illusion. To the idea that there is such a thing as karma is an illusion, because it runs on devotion. Because otherwise, we would be saying that karma is above bhakti, that bhakti is dependent on karma. I can generate a material situation which will materially invoke love of God. No. Love of God invokes love of God, and then the material energy transforms itself accordingly, right? So you can do it in different ways. If you do it personally, on the Bhagavan level, then it's very easy. because Krishna is personally involved. You can also do it on the impersonal level where you're just dealing piously with the facility. That is according to the laws of Krishna. It's more work because you have to gain the adhikar, but it still works. Like the businessman, he's dealing properly with the principles of economics which Krishna has given, because he's God, he's given everything. So he's serving those principles. He's not serving Krishna as a person, but he's serving the principles of economics. He is not trying to do anything that is without or outside the boundaries of how economics work. Same thing with an athlete. You know, he is dealing properly with how energy is being transformed in the body and the focus and all these things. He doesn't make that up whimsically. He learns how it works, and then he serves those principles. So everything works on the devotion that makes us do that. Of course, the highest, of course, is just to surrender to Krishna as Govinda, as Bhagavan. And then just have, I mean, that's the really easy part. If we can just, I mean, easy on one level, difficult on another level, because it means we have to give up our false ego. And that's very difficult. Because false ego feels good. You know, it's like, I'm the man, you know. But it does isolate us from happiness. Because happiness is the connection with Krishna. That's what it is. So if we are the man, then Krishna can't be the man. And he's not going to be, you know, he's not going to be under our control. That's not how it works. So if we want to be happy, we have to serve. And we can see that the more that people are able to be generous, they don't even have to be Krishna conscious. I mean, just materialists who are, that's how pranamoy starts, extended sense gratification. It starts from the understanding that if I work for other people's sense gratification, that means I can actually enjoy more. Right? If I'm on the lower level of anamoy, where it's just my senses and my enjoyment, I will be stopped. You know, that's animals, they're on that level. They don't enjoy much. They're very fearful all the time because constantly they're being checked by the material energy. Pranamoy, that's where modern enjoyment is located. It's the extended sense gratification. We all make laws and rules and social customs that are designed so we can all enjoy and exploit the material nature. And we call it all, this is where all the isms are, altruism and humanitarianism and all these niceties that are just designed so that I can enjoy maximum myself, basically. And that's why we say sometimes, I mean, it sounds very harsh to say that the materialists have no good qualities. Nevertheless, that's what we say, because the good qualities they're displaying are not theirs. As soon as the facility changes or the situation changes, which it does all the time, then the good qualities go away. The good qualities are there, the niceties and all the isms are there because we can gain something. When that situation changes and we can't gain anything anymore, the niceties disappear and then the frustration comes up because the false ego will not allow us to deal with it because I'm supposed to be in control. So that's the material consciousness. And this works, you call yourself a devotee and you start chanting japa, that doesn't go away. It's not like a switch that just turns off. This tendency to get distracted by the dravya, by the facility, is still there, right? So if we don't make absolutely sure that we always put the relationships on the top, the relationships of service at the top, then we will face difficulty in our spiritual life. It will be a very bumpy ride. So it's not a problem to have material conditioning. It's not a problem to have a mix. You know, it's like the offense is to maintain material attachments. It's not an offense to have them, but to maintain them. So you have purushartha and kratvartha. So a kratvartha is a temporary goal and a purushartha is the ultimate goal. So if your purushartha is Krishna consciousness, then your kratvartha can be like, I want a family, or I need to have a good job, I need some nice facility because I grew up in a nice family or something. That's not necessarily sinful. That's just, you're just dealing with your conditioning. You're engaging your conditioning. That's not a problem. But if the purushartha is on a lower level, I am dharmic because that means I can enjoy. Right? That's what the demons do. That's what Hiranyakashipu does. He is super Vedic. I mean, he's much more fixed up than any one of us, even some of the, you know, very Brahminical Hindu social clubs we have who are super mode of goodness. They're not on his level. He's doing sacrifices for so long and everything is going on. Why? Sense gratification. So his Purusharta is the sense gratification. His Kratvarta is the dharmic system. So his ultimate goal is lower than the immediate goal. That's sinful. Does that make sense? Because we're now exploiting Krishna's system for our own benefit. We're not offering it to him. So the Purusharta has to be higher than the Kratvarta. The temporary goal has to be leading towards a goal that is higher. Then we jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda ki Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki Gauranitai ki. Then it will be purifying. Then we will call it Karma Misra Bhakti. Right? It's bhakti, but it's mixed with a little karma. That's fine. It's purifying. Bhakti will purify anything. But if we go the other way, it becomes bhakti misra karma, karma kanda. You're using bhakti as a tool to get your fruitive activities. That's what we don't want. And that's the problem sometimes in the neophyte stage. We can't distinguish between the activity that we're attached to and the actual devotion. We think they're the same thing. Sometimes we hear that if you're not doing this or that, you can't really be self-realized. And this and that happens to be the exact service that that devotee saying it is doing, right? So that's a problem because we haven't distinguished between the two. So we have to notice, is this actually increasing my service mentality? Am I able to go above and beyond when there's a need for it? Or am I just saying, well, that's not my service, Prabhu? Because if we say that, not my service, Prabhu, as like an automatic thing, then it means that we're not actually on the devotional platform. It's just karmakanda. This is just my job. I'm at the temple. This is my service. And it means I can get food. So we want to be in a mode of service that is generic. However that can manifest, okay, we may have our favorite service or our less favorite service, but the mood of service is everywhere. And if need be, we will do whatever needs to be done, right? That's devotional service. So yeah. So because otherwise we'll get attached to the externals and it'll drag us down. We will just be increasing our attachment instead of decreasing it. So the good thing about devotional service being a science is that it works for everybody. We don't have to be worried that it works. The bad news is that you have to actually apply it. You know, you have to, like any scientific experiment, we are the subject. We're that which is being experimented on. It will work. It's worked for everybody who engages in it. So it will work, but we have to actually apply it, you know. So the different externals of the process are important. Of course they're important, but they're still secondary to the mood. So the way to check is, am I developing this mood? Is, do you carry that mood into the other stuff that you do? Like you do your washing, or someone dropped something. You didn't drop it. Are you picking it up? You know, there's this thing that a Vaishnava, when he leaves a room, it should always be just a little bit more tidy than when he entered. Is that a principle we're following? You know, or is it just like, no, someone dropped something, who cares? You know, because one thing is the japa, that's difficult enough as it is, but at least we're attentively trying to be spiritual or transcendental. Or the class, we're trying to understand the philosophy of deity worship. Okay, we're trying to understand it's Krishna. But when we're doing our laundry, are we trying to understand that we're doing it for Krishna? Or is it just something we need to get over with? Because if that's the case, then we have to also work at that. It's something that we need to work at because we have to take it everywhere. We have to understand that there is only devotional service. You know, there is no material life. There is no balance between my devotional life and my material life. The material life, everything that works in the material life, is because it follows the principles that Krishna has given us. So it is also a spiritual life. Now, if you connect it with Krishna, if you have a job, family, car, so you can worship Krishna, go to the temple, do these things, then it's perfect, then it's spiritualized. If you don't, it's just illusion, it's just useless. So that's the thing, that anything only has the quality of its connection to Krishna. That's why it's given, so that we can connect it back to Krishna. So you need the desire, and you need some paraphernalia, and you need some skill. But that all comes if we have the right intention. If we actually have a pure intention, the rest comes. It's like children. In the modern system, we think we have to teach children how to read. We don't. We have to give them the desire to read. They will teach themselves. Their brains are like sponges, right? So this whole thing about testing them all the time, and no, you're not good enough at this or that, that has the reverse result. So we see now that children are worse off in the schools today than 20 years ago. They're worse at reading, math, anything, because we're trying to force it on them. If we instead inspire them, they will learn it themselves. You know, they can do amazing things, children, when they have the desire. So in the same way with our devotional service, we should be inspiring others. That's how we inspire ourselves, by the way. If we can inspire others, then it everything else will work out. The cleanliness, the sense control, the regulation, all that comes naturally because you see why you're doing it. If we're just doing it mechanically, it's not devotional service. You know, it's just not, because the mood is not there. It's religious, okay, so we'll generate a nice material situation for ourselves in the future, but it won't get us out. It just will not get us out, because we're still attached to the externals. So that's the meditation, to try and actually not get out of the... See, we want to get out of a negative situation, but the problem is we think that it's the situation that's negative. No, it's the principle. It's not... Does that make sense? Most devotees, that was in Peru, I heard, they tried to figure it out, and they came to the conclusion that 80% of those devotees who were affiliated with the temple, they came to the temple out of suffering. They were suffering in their life, and that's why they chose to go to the temple. So the trick is to realize that the suffering is inherent in all material nature. It's not my situation that's the problem. It's the principal situation, right? So that's the problem with this way, is that when you have a painful situation, you try and solve the problem, and then when the pain goes away, you go back to the same behavior as before, right? Yoga is now the most popular pastime of materialists in Denmark, I read somewhere, right? So they go to the yoga studio, they get all flexible, and they get all centered, and all these buzzwords they're using, feel so spiritual, you know. And then they go out and do exactly the same activity that got them in there in the first place. And so they go back and forth the whole week. They're fighting and struggling to maintain their material life with all their external possessions that make no sense actually to have, and which just bind them more and more. And then on Saturday evening, they go to the yoga studio and curl up like a pretzel and feel really spiritual. And then they go out and do exactly the same thing again. It's just the samsara again, the wheel of life, but now you're just including a pseudo-scientific, you should say, yoga practice, because it's not actually the real yoga practice. It's not like yama and niyama are being introduced first, but there's some benefit because it's still part of Krishna's set of rules, and we're following. So you get that benefit, and you feel all good and centered, and then, you know, you go to the party and you start drinking, and then the next morning it's like, where am I? Then you go to the yoga studio again. So these processes, they work whether we understand them or not. But if we really want to get out, we have to understand the whole principle, not just that it works, but why it works. it works because Krishna doesn't like to see us here, because this is wrong. We're not supposed to be here. Someone said any sane person would go crazy in the material world, right? Because we're not meant to be here. So that's the problem, and that's the problem for Maharaj Bharat here, that he only partially understands it. So he understands it to the point that he's following Varnashram, but he doesn't understand it to the point that he develops full Krishna consciousness. He gets self-realized, means he's on the level of Vigyan, but he's not on the level of Anandamoy, because he's still distracted. It says here, one cannot imitate the wonderful activities of Maharaj Bharat. No one could perform such activities in the past, nor will anyone be able to do so in the future. So materially speaking, we do not have any qualification. I mean, just forget it. We can't even follow Varnashram. We're still discussing if it's something that we should follow. That's ridiculous. It's everywhere in the books. It's just like half of the books is just Varnashram. I mean, if you can see where it is, it's not necessarily the word Varnashram is used, but if you see how, like Mahaprabhu says in Shikshastakam, I don't want money or followers or beautiful women. That's the Varnas. That's the three lower. Beautiful women is the Sudra, money is the Vaishya, and followers is the Kshatriya. The lower modes. So if you know how to see it, Varnashram is everywhere. So it's not even a discussion. We can't even do that. So how are we going to obtain Krishna consciousness? We're going to do it by understanding that it's all about relationships. It's all about serving the devotees. Then Krishna is happy because Krishna loves the devotees. That's why Krishna comes to Bahulashva and Shrutadeva with all his homeboys. Because that's what it's about. It's about the devotees. For us, it's about Krishna, but for Krishna, it's about the devotees. So if we understand that, and we set Krishna at the top, then the devotees, then there's me, then everything works out perfectly. That's the situation. Any questions or comments or corrections, chastisements, glorifications of Krishna?